Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 8th day of May, 2021. I'm your host, Mark Call, and if there's anything that's been obvious over the last few weeks, it's that the level of demonic influence, call it censorship, call it outright genocide, now exceeds just about anything ever seen or even believed possible throughout most of human history. And if you think there's even a bit of hyperbole in that statement, stay with me. But just to set the stage, let's start off with some of the lesser indications along those very same lines. On Thursday this week was the so-called National Day of Prayer, for what it's now worth, and the Biden Fuhrer issued a proclamation to that effect, which more than a few folks noted was different in that it left out any mention of God completely. Now, granted, I'm pretty sure he doesn't know the real name of the creator of the universe. Actually, I'm pretty sure he doesn't know the names of most of his senior staff. But you do have to admit this was over the top, even for a regime that arguably hates the idea of once self-evident truths proclaimed unanimously and the fact that our rights come from that creator. And as you know, Biden doesn't think they really matter anyway. And as you might expect, he used the occasion to pontificate about the religion of science as opposed to the real thing, saying the challenges of our time are a reckoning on racial justice as well as the, quote, existential threat of climate change. What, no mention of the existential threat of mass depopulation? Ironically, though, about as close as he got to Scripture was echoing the book of Judges, where he suggested that each man do what's right in his own eyes, as if that wasn't a negative thing. Quote, follow their own faiths and conscience. He praised religious diversity rather than the fact that we were once one nation under God. But this is a line that somehow really bugs me. We remember, he said, and celebrate the role that the healing balm of prayer can play in our lives. Kind of like it's nothing but a placebo and doesn't really do anything, because after all, there is no real God, at least not in America with a K anymore, who's going to do anything except hold this nation to account. The closest he got in this entire spiel to actually referencing a national Christian heritage was the boilerplate that comes at the end of most of these proclamations. Quote, in witness whereof I have hereunto set my hand this 5th day of May in the year of our Lord 2021 and the independence of the United States of America, the 245th, and he should have added this too, and of the glorious Fourth Reich, year one. Towards the end of the week, the latest jobs data came out, and it was downright dismal, literally shocking, say some of the reports. The April payrolls miss was huge. Just 266,000 jobs were added, and that was way, way, way below the expectations of about 1 million. Some people were forecasting 2 million, and that's the second biggest miss in history. And there wouldn't have been any job gains at all if it wasn't for waiters and car dealers. Still, though, a big part of the problem seems to be actual private businesses trying to compete with Big Brother paying people to sit home and do nothing. For example, Minneapolis Fed Chief Neil Kashkari is admitting that expanded unemployment insurance was keeping workers out of the labor market, contributing to the disappointing number, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is urging the Biden Fuhrer to end the pandemic handouts, saying that paying people not to work is killing any so-called recovery. It turns out that about 1 in 4 people are actually making more sitting home on the government dole than they could make with a productive job. There is this factor, too, although it doesn't get much press. I'll bet you, folks, there are quite a few people saying, hey, I'm willing to make less and stay home rather than have to put that damnable mask on and destroy my health. Call it at least a 1-2 punch to a once-productive economy. And I do think it's ironic, folks, that the very same people that will tell you how evil it is if you try to feed the bears or whatever at the national parks, because then they become dependent on handouts, can't see the obvious when it comes to human beings. But that's arguably why they're leftists to begin with. From there, let's go back and look at some of the other flashing red warning signs from earlier in the week on the economy. But I guess that, too, we have to introduce with a bit more insanity. And yeah, where else but CCP Central, the Sanitarium on the Potomac, and the Marionette in Chief, who actually said this on Monday.
The reason I'm bothering to do this is I keep hearing on the press Biden's going to raise your taxes. Anybody making less than $400,000 a year will not pay a single penny in taxes.
Say what? Well, I'll admit at first I thought maybe he was only talking to illegal aliens. Come on and get your freebies. But no, he actually said it.
Anybody making less than $400,000 a year will not pay a single penny in taxes. And we will not increase the deficit either. unlike the last gigantic tax cut, which increased the deficit by $2 trillion.
Well, a few Republicans in the Senate immediately thought maybe Biden had finally come to his senses. Others realized, no, he's just senile, or he's lying, or maybe he's so senile he's even forgotten when he's lying. Others realized immediately it was just another super gaffe, and that's how the Daily Mail put it in their headline, although the Brits called it a blunder. And did even point out that the transcript of the speech, released later, didn't even correct the statement. So clearly, the guy's just trying to read the teleprompter. Your host, though, has a different take. I think maybe somebody clued the idiot in on the hyperinflation that's coming real soon now. And he's trying to let people know up front that, hey, pretty soon, $400,000 not only will not require you to pay any taxes, unless, of course, the communists repeal inflation indexing, but won't even buy a burger at McDonald's. Oh, wait a minute. You're only going to be allowed to buy one of those a month anyway, so who cares? Unless you think I'm kidding on that score, let's talk about the insanity in what were once called free markets, but haven't been for a long time. Now they're not even a farce. And here we'd better pick up the story on Monday, where an after-the-market-close summary from Zero Hedge said crypto and gold jump, along with silver, of course, in a major way, as the dollar dumped and stocks and bonds both rose. There was also what they called a disappointing stagflationary miss on ISM manufacturing numbers, and Warren Buffett and his Berkshire Hathaway partner, Charlie Munger, both mused about inflation. Basically, it's out of control. The trouble seems to be, Warren still doesn't have a clue as to why. But hey, he's a socialist, so you wouldn't expect that. And on that score, in a related story, Zero Hedge put it this way. Costs are up, up, up. We're seeing substantial inflation, admits, they say, a surprised Warren Buffett, as both Powell and Yellen still see nothing. Speaking to shareholders over the weekend, Buffett had even more to say than that, though. Quote, we're seeing very substantial inflation. It's very interesting. I mean, we're raising prices. People are raising prices to us, and it's being accepted. The costs are just up, up, up. Steel costs, you know, just every day, they're going up. And he continued, it just won't stop. People have money in their pocket, or at least they have fiat, folks, and they pay higher prices. There's more inflation going on than people would have anticipated 6 months ago, or thereabouts. Well, speak for yourself, Warren. Some of us have been warning about this for longer than that. Among them, Austrian economist Peter Schiff, who said Buffett is right that inflation is substantial, but wrong to blame it on a so-called red-hot economy. It's inflation that's red-hot, not the economy, continued Schiff. Red-hot economies lower prices. Ice-cold economies, stimulated by deficits and money printing, cause prices to rise. Let's switch gears now to the aftermath of the coup via this story about consolidating power. Comes from the conservative Treehouse in Sundance about a new internal investigation by Joe Bama, and you know who that is, and his Department of Homeland Security, Octung, which serves two obvious purposes. First, it'll identify anyone with what Sundance refers to as nationalistic outlooks and or an America First ideology. In essence, it will identify the political enemies of the Reich, i.e. those who didn't vote for Biden. Arguably, at least several hundred million Americans. Second, it will send the intended chill through the ranks of all DHS agencies to quiet any dissent to the approved leftist approach, aka the DHS political agenda, which essentially puts the entirety of the Department of Octung Homeland Security through the same process previously deployed against just the element of it known as the Federal Bunglers of Instigation during the terms of Robert Mueller and James Comey, i.e. eliminate any and all opposition to the Joe Bama agenda. And as the DHS directive explains, the so-called investigation is already underway. Quote, at the direction of the secretary, a cross-departmental working group comprised of senior officials, and guess how senior, folks? Yeah, probably none of them from the Trump administration, will immediately begin a comprehensive review of how best to prevent, detect, and respond to threats related to domestic violent extremism, i.e. somebody that can read the Constitution, within the DHS. This internal team, which will be led by the department's chief security officer, will produce a report with recommendations for the secretary on how best to identify and respond to these threats. says Sundance, it doesn't take a deep political thinker to understand exactly what the DHS is attempting to do. Cement as many leftist, communist, and radical left-wing perspectives into place as quickly as possible. And in order to do that, they'd better remove any internal opposition to the plan. And let's not forget, DHS, whether you like it or not, runs just about everything you now encounter with the FedGov, including the Transportation Sexual Abuse, or TSA, and this internal purge is thus needed in order to support a fully weaponized police state. Insert your COVID passport here. Note, of course, that a similar program has already been deployed against Americans, and the FBI is currently promoting the incarceration. We don't need no stinking trial of anyone suspected of even attending the January 6th rally in the District of Criminal Swamp. So this effort by DHS is obviously more of the same. Oh, and let's not forget that the United States Postal Service, too, was also operating their own internal investigation into Americans using their technical capability and their own police force. That one was called ICOP, for Internet Covert Operations Program, which involved having analysts trawl through socialist media sites looking for what the document described as inflammatory postings. And we've been talking about those all day now, haven't we? And then sharing that information across various government agencies. And what's described in this DHS memo is almost word-for-word identical to what was happening with that anti-constitutional abomination. And now with today's announcement, the DHS, too, is preparing to use private contractors to, quote, scour public data and social media to compile lists of dissident citizens for watch lists and no-fly lists and, of course, yeah, no-guns-for-you lists. The Treehouse goes on to cite an NBC article which said DHS planning to expand its relationships with companies that scour public data for that intelligence they want, and also to better harness the vast trove of data they already collect on Americans, including travel and commercial data through Customs and Border Protection, Immigrations, Customs Enforcement, the Coast Guard, Secret Service, and other DHS components. In other words, concludes Sundance, it's all part of the same program with the same intents. These German Stasi would have just loved this one. From there, it's time to turn to what's rapidly shaping up to be the biggest attempted genocide in human history. Courtesy of Leo Holman, as well as Dr. Peter McCullough, in an interview with journalist Alex Newman of The New American, who gave out some of the numbers and said that if what's going on with the so-called vaccines being produced by the likes of Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and others were any other not politically correct mass poison human experiment, it would have been pulled from the market by now for safety reasons. And that's beyond obvious, folks. All it takes is a few people suffering serious side effects or much less dropping over dead right after taking the poke, and they would have long since pulled this and said, hey, why did we ever allow it to be tested on humans like this in the first place? A couple of patrons get sick at a restaurant or a grocery store chain from something like E. coli, Big Brother will shut everything down and recall tens of thousands of pounds of tainted meat or vegetables or whatever. But if over half of the people who take the second poke suffer some kind of adverse side effects, well, you should have known that was going to happen anyway. No problem. Let's just keep poking them. But can we even allow people to buy hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and Z-Pak in order to treat that same disease with an extremely high success rate? Oh, of course not, because that would mean we wouldn't need the emergency exemption to keep doing what we're doing. And note that they're already literally pillaring people for even suggesting that natural cures like vitamin D3 and K2 or vitamin C might help avoid the whole problem to begin with. How dare you! Dr. McCullough is called one of the world's most prominent medical doctors with expertise in treating COVID-1984, and he's gone on the record with a scathing rebuke of the U.S. government's approach to, allegedly, fighting the virus, saying that Big Brother's strategy carried out in cooperation with what else? The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the UN's WHO? Or World Health Organization, but hey, how's that for redundancy? Has resulted in tens of thousands of unnecessary deaths and is now being followed up with thousands more deaths caused by the mass injection program. So far, official numbers say 3,544 deaths and over 12,600 serious injuries between the middle of December and April 23rd of 2021. But as we know, given the historic underreporting of the actual numbers by VAERS, or the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, the real numbers are probably at least 10 and more likely 100 times that. McCullough holds the honor of being the most cited medical doctor on COVID-19 treatments at the National Library of Medicine with more than 600 citations. He's testified before Congress and won numerous awards during his distinguished medical career. Now he's put his career on the line, folks, and that may all be over for him. But thankfully, there are at least a few medical doctors, and more are coming forward all the time at risk of their career with the integrity to tell people what's really going on. Dr. McCullough points out that less high profile and extremely important to the worldwide political agenda drugs, even after actual animal testing and then certification, aren't treated this way. Quote, a typical new drug at about 5 deaths, unexplained deaths, we get a black box warning. Your listeners would see it on TV saying it may cause death, noted McCullough, and then at about 50 deaths, it's pulled off the market. There's precedent for this. During the 1976 swine flu pandemic, the U.S. attempted to vaccinate 55 million Americans, a small fraction of what have already been subjected to this experimental treatment. But at that point, the shot caused only about 500 cases of paralysis and a mere 25 deaths. And at 25 deaths, said Dr. McCullough, the program was killed. Now we've got at least 150 times that number, and they're still poking people like they want to kill them en masse. Because it seems pretty clear that they really do, said Dr. McCullough. As of late March, we had about 77 million people vaccinated for COVID, with 2,602 deaths reported, so it's unprecedented how many deaths have accrued. Then on March 8th, the CDC announced on their website, with very little fanfare, that they had reviewed about 1,600 deaths with unnamed FDA doctors, and they indicated that not a single one of them, no, not one, don't worry your pretty little heads about it, back to the quote, was related to the vaccine. And he said, I think that was concerning in the academic community. Gee, do you think? I would certainly hope so, folks. McCullough said that he knows from firsthand experience that doing a thorough investigation, if the goal was actually to find out what was going on, that means, into 1,600 potentially vaccine-related deaths would have taken months to complete. Quote, I've chaired and participated in dozens of data safety monitoring boards and sat on those committees, and I can tell you that this type of work would have taken many months to review all the labs, the death certificates, and all the circumstances of an event. It is impossible for unnamed regulatory doctors without any experience with COVID-19 to opine that none of the deaths were related to the vaccine. Unquote. And as Leo Holman notes by way of comparison, given 195 million or so people receiving the flu shot annually, there are about 20 to 30 deaths reported to VAERS every year. And even if it's 100 times that many, that's still tiny compared to this new mass injection, which has already claimed over 3,500 lives with only about half that number of vaccinations, which is not only a stunningly high ratio of deaths to vaccination. And remember, folks, this is just in the short term. Doesn't include long-term effects, which will be unknown and covered up even more ruthlessly. This, though, is still the highest for any so-called vaccine in U.S. history. And yet, here's a shocker, no major media news outlet has launched an investigation, while independent journalists and analysts have been ruthlessly censored. But maybe this next story helps to shed a little light on the why of that situation. From Lance D. Johnson via Natural News, attorneys general from 12 different states are now calling on the world's top socialist media networks to completely eradicate any negative claims about the COVID-1984 mass murder. So-called vaccines. Two Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg and Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey have already implemented massive, quote, misinformation policies. That means they want you to believe misinformation, and anything that's contrary to that, they're not going to allow you to hear, that remove any dissent against government lockdowns, mandatory mask idiocy, and Big Pharma's forceful vaccine push. However, the new COVID vaccines are so faulty and unsafe that vaccine injury and death claims are still spreading across social media, in spite of their efforts, which are increasing. After being noticeably censored on their own pages for trying to share vaccine truths, two Facebook users have now flocked to various Facebook groups to talk about COVID-19, mRNA, and etc. poke side effects. One of those groups reported tens of thousands of personal testimonies about the direct harms of the vaccines, had more than 120,000 people already signed up, and was growing by 10,000 plus every week as vaccine injury reports poured in. And as we talked about last week, they were deep-sixed by the evil two Facebook, because that kind of truth simply isn't going to be allowed. Johnson reminds us of George Orwell's 1984, where he wrote about the Ministry of Truth then, which were kind of pikers compared to what we're seeing today, with Big Brother and his public-private partners, aka health officials and corporate entities, becoming dystopian controllers of misinformation, not to mention manipulative propagandists who carry out the deceptions of the vaccine-sick industry. Socialist media algorithms have already been designed to limit the spread of what they call misinformation, which is, of course, exactly the opposite of what they label it, but none of that has been enough so far. No matter how hard the powers that be try to silence personal testimonies of vaccine injury and death, the real truth continues to surface in spite of their efforts. At least, though, folks, they do make it very hard to get actual statistics about just how widespread the death and massive injuries really are. Here, though, just a quick aside, a couple of headlines from over the weekend. A 2-year-old baby died during Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine experiments on children. We're seeing more sterility among men, spontaneous abortions, and infertility among women, although it'll no doubt take quite a while before most women realize just how much they've been affected. Certainly the menstrual issues, though, are showing up en masse. And a once healthy 33-year-old Pennsylvania woman was left paralyzed after she took the Pfizer poke. After hospitalization, which found nothing out of the ordinary, says the story, she was eventually able to regain most of the feeling and strength in her arms, but her legs are still called a point of concern, and there's lingering paralysis in her hips. And in spite of a huge number of similar reports, yeah, guess what? There's no indication that there's anything here to do with the COVID-19 vaccine, and Pfizer officials have yet to contact the woman's family. And you gotta admit, why should they bother? Not like they're gonna be allowed to be held liable, or eventually even to warn anybody about it on socialist media. The most disturbing aspect about all of this, though, says Johnson, there are law enforcement officials who are criminalizing free speech and scientific progress. They're not standing up for the rights of the vaccine injured, the oppressed, or the abused, but instead are actively working to oppress those who will not comply and have been harmed by these medical experiments that are clearly in violation of what were once called the Nuremberg Principles. I'll say it again, folks. Adolf had to get people on the trains. The Fourth Reich is getting them to line up and take their injections. But what else would you expect the Reich to do in order to keep the big lie going, besides shutting down truth about what's really happening to people? Hey, how about lying about the statistics, the metrics, and of course the PCR tests? Remember how it was that you could get any number of false positives you wanted just by cranking up what's called the cycle threshold? Essentially, it's been acknowledged by those that have some integrity that any CT number above about 35 is totally useless because of the bogus number of incredibly high false positives. But on the day that the Biden Fuhrer was put into power, the recommended cycle threshold number was magically changed, lowered, in order to make it look like, imagine that, under the new Fuhrer, the numbers are dramatically reduced. Isn't it wonderful? Must be the masks. Well, now it's the poke. And here's a story courtesy of Tap Newswire that says, new American CDC documents have revealed that PCR tests, but only for vaccinated people, will now use a 28 cycle threshold. Still, though, the American CDC will use a 40-plus cycle threshold to inflate the number of COVID cases because the Ministry of Truth long ago realized that cases scare people even more than actual deaths, of which there haven't really been all that many, outside of the aged with comorbidities and, of course, New York nursing homes, thanks to the mass murder of Albany. By the way, the People's Republic of Canada also uses a 40-plus cycle threshold, which produces around a 97% false positive rate. What's the point? Lowering the PCR threshold for vaccinated people is exactly what you'd want to do to perpetuate the massive fraud and make it look like the vaccines are working, as predicted by anybody who's been paying attention now for quite some time. Now, here's the irony, folks. In spite of the lower PCR thresholds, a number of vaccinated people, as a matter of fact, a huge number of them, are showing up positive for, guess what? The booga booga flu. And in this case, given the lower thresholds, they probably really are suffering from exactly what the vaccine was supposed to protect them from. Isn't that amazing? Even if it's not the least bit surprising. After all, we were warned that the whole point of this massive human experiment was to incubate new and more deadly variants of the Fauci/CCP bioweapon. Let's go to break with one bit of tyrannical insanity, presented with only this brief bit of introduction. Remember when patriotism meant fighting for your rights and your country? Now it just means show that you're a good little woke slave. Wear your muzzle and take your poke.
It's a patriotic responsibility, for God's sake. It's making sure that your wife, your children, if in fact they haven't been vaccinated, making sure that they're not going to get sick.
But hey, if they are stupid enough to take the poke and then they keel over and die, we're immune from any and all liability, and we'll silence you so you can't even talk about it. Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening, folks. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And let's start this segment off with a story that, I got to admit, still really bugs me. It comes from Dr. Mercola and his website under the headline, Why I'm Removing All Articles Related to Vitamin D, Vitamin C, Zinc, and, of course, COVID-19. Over the past year, he begins, I've been researching and writing as much as I can to help you take control of your health as fear-mongering media and corrupt politicians have destroyed lives and livelihoods in order to establish global control of the world's population using COVID-1984 and the plandemic as their justification. Also, he says, I've kept you informed about billionaire-backed groups like the Center for Science and the Public Interest. Yeah, sure, CSPI, a partner of what else? Bill Gates' Alliance for Science, both of whom have led campaigns aimed at destroying, says Mercola, my reputation and censoring the information I share. Other attackers have included HealthGuard, which supposedly ranks health sites based on their set of credibility criteria, all of which have sought to discredit my website by ensuring warnings appear whenever you search for my articles or enter my website in an internet browser. And what this means is that a number of well-organized attack partnerships have formed. HealthGuard, a niche service of NewsGuard, another one of the efforts to control the media and censor truth, is, and I put that in there, folks, is funded by big pharma-related public relations company Publicis Group, which is in turn a partner of the World Economic Forum, leading the call for a great reset of the global economy and a complete overhaul of a once-free way of life. HealthGuard is also partnered with what else? Bill Gates' Microsoft company and drug advertising websites like WebMD and Medscape, as well as the Center for Countering Digital Hate, good grief, the progressive cancel culture leader with extensive ties to Big Brother and government think tanks that have recently labeled people questioning the COVID-19 vaccine as national security threats. All right, he goes into a whole lot more detail about the connections here, but I'm going to cut to the chase. What does this mean for you? Through it all, says Dr. Mercola, I've refused to succumb to these front groups and pharmaceutical thugs and their relentless attacks. I've been confident and willing to defend myself in courts of law, as I've had everything reviewed by some of the best attorneys in the country. Unfortunately, the threats have now become very personal, and he doesn't go into detail, and have intensified to the point that I can no longer preserve much of the information and research I've provided to you thus far. These threats are not legal in nature, but if you can imagine what upset billions and their front groups are capable of, I can assure you they've deployed assets to get creative and force me to remove this content. And yes, he says, I cannot elaborate about these events in detail at the moment, so please try to be patient. We'll see whether or not freedom ever returns. Those of you who've watched this criminal regime in action for years know what an Arkansas is. We still don't know what happened to Seth Rich, but we know what it wasn't. And how many dead doctors have we seen over the last couple of years? He then goes on to describe a list of all the things that he's been forced to remove, having to do with vitamin D, and how to deal with the severity of COVID-19. And finally says it's with a heavy heart that I purge my website of valuable information. As noted by Dr. Peter McCulloch during a recent Texas State Senate Health and Human Services Committee hearing, data shows that early treatment could have prevented up to 85% or over 400,000 early COVID-19 deaths. Yet, early treatments were all heavily censored and suppressed. In addition to being a cardiologist and professor of medicine at Texas A&M University Health Sciences Center, Dr. McCulloch also has the distinction of having published the most papers of any person in the history of his field and being an editor of two major major medical journals. Despite this, his video, in which he went through a paper he'd published detailing effective early treatments, was summarily banned by YouTube in 2020. Full stop. So how many people have these satanic censors killed already? This ought to make you as mad as hell. He told the Senate panel, quote, "No wonder we've had 45,000 deaths in Texas. The average person in Texas thinks there's no treatment." And let's not forget for a second here, folks, that had they ever told the truth about the fact that there were a number of treatments and ways to prevent COVID-19, there never would have been an excuse for driving a DNA modification so-called vaccine into your bloodstream at warp speed. This is rapidly shaping up to be the worst crime against humanity in all of human history. Now, why did I start off with this story today? Because given all the information we've seen lately about how destructive and literally satanically evil the vaccine program is and where it's obviously intended to lead, stories like this, I think, make a point that simply cannot be denied. And they go even beyond mask idiocy. They don't care about your health. They're not interested in saving your lives. In fact, there is no doubt about it. This is genocide, and the intent here is to first censor the information so that second, they can kill you with impunity. And we're seeing that. And unless Americans wake up to it and fast, I think at this point it's a lead pipe cinch. Tens, maybe hundreds of millions are going to die. And those minions of Satan who walk in men's shoes are just simply thrilled about it. From there, let's go to the People's Republic of California for another one of those stories that you go, ah, come on, are they really that stupid? No, it's beyond that. They're downright evil. From Ms. Shedlock at MishTalk.com, at least supposedly, to promote equality. Equally stupid and equally dead, California is now proposing a ban on advanced math classes. Don't you know, folks, math is hard. And at least the far left coast would be better off if everybody was equally ignorant. So yes, it's true. In the name of equality, the California Department of Education, sick, and how's that for a misnomer, is seeking to dumb down the brightest kids who are the most gifted at math. Says Mish, I had a friend tell me about this, and I didn't believe it, so I wanted to verify it for myself and went out and read the California Department of Education Mathematics Framework, where they talk about seeking culturally responsive mathematics education. And yeah, education isn't the right word, folks. Rather than worry about teaching advanced math, they want to allow students to examine issues of, quote, environmental and social justice. And they said mathematics pathways must open mathematics to all students, eliminating option-limiting tracking, i.e. advanced classes. Things like calculus that nobody really needs anyway, especially, I guess, if we already know you're just a useless eater. This whole curriculum, folks, is wrapped in feel-good BS that boils down to, hey, it just isn't right that some students are naturally more gifted at math than others, so we're going to dumb them all down, starting early, but especially in grades 6 through 12. Mish then quotes from the conclusion of a Reason article about this idiocy. He says he agrees, and so does your host, quote, "If California adopts this framework, which is currently under public review, and if there are any intelligent people that haven't left the state yet, they better get out and say hell no to this, the state will end up sabotaging its brightest students. The government should let kids opt out of math if it's not for them. Don't let the false idea that there's no such thing as a gifted student herald the end of advanced math entirely. Instead, and in the name of so-called equality," and we know that that's one of those leftist buzzwords, folks, that means the exact opposite of what it really is, "the proposed framework aims to keep everyone learning, or not, at the same dumbed-down level for as long as possible. In other words, the California Board of Education intends to sabotage the best and brightest in the name of making everyone equal." Which leads me to repeat something I've literally said for years now, folks. If you love your children and have any desire that they not grow up to be dumbed-down idiots, when it comes to the public indoctrination centers, there's really only one right answer. Get them out, get them out, get them out. And by the way, that seems to now apply to the entire state of California. And speaking of dumbed down, when it comes to economics especially, I guess this next story really fits here. This comes from Dr. Ron Paul via the Mises Institute, and it says, no, conservatives should not embrace something called MMT, or magical money theory. No, that's not what they say it stands for, but it does seem to follow that when people have been dumbed down enough, they might believe this stuff. Dr. Paul begins by quoting a book that he read, and I think he regrets it, from Jonathan Colbreth. It's called Modern Monetary Theory for Conservatives. And he says, one can't help but think of Murray Rothbard's quip that it's not a crime to be ignorant of economics, but it is totally irresponsible to have a loud and vociferous opinion on economic subjects while remaining in that state of ignorance. and Culbreth's case for MMT rests on a complete ignorance of basic economic principles regarding the role of money in a free market economy. Well, folks, we haven't had one of those for quite a while. Dr. Paul knows it, but let's read the rest of the paragraph. Money, he says, whether it's precious metals, fiat currency, crypto, or some other good, is more than just a unit of account that makes exchange possible. Money is also a key part of the equation. Uh-oh, there's one of those nasty words of the price system, which allows market participants to discover the highest use of goods and services as determined by the demonstrated preferences, i.e. what they're willing to spend their hard-earned money on, of consumers, investors, workers, and business owners. And a freely functioning price system and a stable currency are thus the key to a proper functioning market. And we haven't really had either, folks, for at least half a century. The most important information conveyed by prices, says Dr. Paul, is the price of money itself, i.e. interest rates. When central banks increase the money supply to facilitate government spending, they artificially lower interest rates, which distorts the information interest rates convey to market actors. And I'll contend that that is now obviously deliberate. It's about part of the big deception. This results in investors sinking more money into projects that are not supported by underlying market conditions. Some would call it malinvestment, which leads to a boom inevitably followed by a bust. MMT's policy of never-ending increases in the money supply would create more and bigger bubbles. Why? Because you have to create bigger bubbles as the existing bubbles collapse, leading to more and bigger busts. Culbreth misunderstands what inflation is, misidentifying it, says Dr. Paul, as a rise in the price levels. No, folks, that's the effect, not the cause. Inflation, says Dr. Paul correctly, is the very act of money creation, generally out of nothing, folks, by central banksters. He goes on to describe in some detail about how government lies about the effects of inflation. We've talked about that quite a bit here. And then makes the point that MMT relies on so-called government experts to plan the economy. Because Big Brother knows what you need, what you want, and what they're going to do with you a lot better than you're ever going to know. Here's the money paragraph. For MMT to work, and it doesn't, the Federal Reserve must have the ability to know exactly how much the money supply needs to increase in order to support expansion of government without, damaging the economy. Congress, with the help of those government experts, must then know when the economy has reached full employment. And when that happens, whatever that means, and they'll change the meaning if it suits them, Congress must be able to determine exactly how much to increase taxes and which taxes to increase to keep inflation from damaging the economy. The great Austrian economist Ludwig von Mises demonstrated that government planners could not manage the economy without damaging people's standard of living. Have we seen enough examples of that, folks, to make the point? This is because the only way to know the value of goods is by seeing how much individuals are willing to pay for them. But government's use of force to take control of those resources makes it impossible to know their true value, thus making it impossible to perform rational economic calculation. And, of course, in California, they're dumbed down to the point they don't know what calculation means anymore anyway. Mises' student, Nobel laureate F.A. Hayek, pointed out that there's no way that central planners, including democratically elected politicians and central banksters, could possibly have the knowledge necessary to effectively manage an economy. Oh, I know what you're thinking. Now they have AI. Big Brother's going to turn all of this over to some kind of Skynet. And they have your best interest at heart now, don't they? Says Dr. Paul, one need not have read the works of Mises, Hayek, and other Austrians to understand the folly of thinking that so-called experts, much less politicians, could successfully run an economy. Even a cursory examination of the numerous failures of attempts at central planning throughout history shows that government management of the economy inevitably fails, and we're seeing it again now. Bottom line, MMT suffers from the same flaws as every other version of this fairy tale. The only long-term benefit of the adoption of MMT, says Dr. Paul, is that it will hasten the inevitable collapse of the welfare, warfare, fiat economy system. And while that's true, the problem is they know it's coming. And that's why Big Brother and the global banksters have a great reset, all ready to drop on the world population. From there, let's go on to some other aspects of the downright obscene. This piece comes from Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge about Two Facebook, one of the most evil corporations on the planet. And yeah, it's a tough competition, where their oversight board, SIC, on Wednesday decided to uphold the company's indefinite suspension of former President Donald Trump, claiming that, quote, Trump's posts during the Capitol riot severely violated Two Facebook's rules and encouraged and legitimized violence. unquote. And hey, that's our job. If you want to engage in violence, folks, let Two Facebook tell you which Target stores need looting and which buildings in Seattle, Portland, and a communist cesspool city near you need to be firebombed. What do you say about this level of hypocrisy? Zero Hedge does note towards the end of the piece, though, that this all comes one day after President Trump announced a new platform called From the Desk of Donald J. Trump, which, even if the major socialist media platforms won't, lets him post comments, images, and videos. Why, you can even try, it says, to share them via two Facebook or Twitter accounts, but you can pretty well guess how that's eventually going to work out. If you're interested, though, about the only way to really make sure you get there is at www.donaldjtrump.com/desk. Here next, a bit of good news, although it's arguably too little and way too late. A federal judge has overturned the absolutely ridiculous, unconstitutional, and completely out of their authority eviction moratorium of a bureaucratic public-private partner, the friggin' CDC. A month ago, the Wall Street Journal editorial board stated yet another true but unpopular fact. Continuing government bans on eviction and foreclosure, even though they're not really government, folks, are doing more harm than good. Gee, do you think? The CDC, without actual authority, claimed to invoke the 1944 Public Health Service Act, allowing that agency to take measures to prevent the spread of communicable diseases between states. Because people who get evicted just might move in with family or friends and spread disease, said the Corporate Death Council. So what dictate couldn't the CDC justify under this expansive rationale? In short, said the journal, the government's bludgeoning private businesses to fix a problem it created, and some of us would say deliberately. Suspension of rent and mortgage payments was justifiable, they claim, last spring when states locked down, and as a result, some 22 million workers lost jobs. But since the jobless rate has come back down a bit, now employers are desperate to hire. They're finding, by the way, that they can't afford people who can make more money sitting around at home doing nothing and watching TV. Landlords, though, say increasingly they can't afford to make mortgage payments since there's no money coming in, utilities and maintenance costs since there's no money coming in, because they can't remove non-paying renters. And all of these so-called crisis programs, can you imagine this, folks, are distorting the housing market.
Morons. I've got morons on my team.
Now let's just put it this way, folks. The unintended consequences, or are they really, of this idiocy go far beyond what most people can even wrap their heads around. But on Wednesday, better late than never, a federal judge has vacated the nationwide freeze on evictions put in place by so-called federal health officials, yeah, sure, to help, or so they said, cash-strapped renters remain in their homes during the pandemic, but screw the landlords and everybody else who's somewhere down the chain. The CDC under the Biden regime had sought, though, to extend the eviction moratorium through the end of June, resulting in D.C. District Judge Dabney Friedrich, who ruled on the side of the plaintiffs, saying that CDC overstepped its authority by extending the eviction moratorium, first included in the March CARES Act, passed by Congress, to all residential properties nationwide. That can happen in a communist regime, don't you know, because you don't own the property. Quote, the pandemic has triggered difficult policy decisions that have had enormous real-world consequences, and the nationwide eviction moratorium, said Friedrich in his opinion, is one such. It's the role of the political branches, not the courts, to assess the merits of policy measures designed to combat the spread of disease, even during a global pandemic. He didn't spell it right. But the question for the court is a narrow one. Does the Public Health Service Act grant the CDC the legal authority to impose a nationwide eviction moratorium? Answer, and this, your host says, is an easy one. It does not. And as Tyler Durden summarizes it, there are some obvious consequences both ways on this one. Because homelessness has exploded in the U.S. and other Western countries in 2020, it's still on the rise with no signs of getting better anytime soon. Some argue it's not as bad as it would have been, and still will get, I note, without the aggressive forbearance and moratorium programs implemented by Big Brother. But this has side effects. What will happen when the suspensions end? And if they extend, what will be the other unintended consequences? Certainly, eviction waves could throw millions into the streets in the months and years ahead if the crisis worsens. One thing I think is pretty clear, folks. Guess who ultimately will get all of the properties that will ultimately, in fact, be foreclosed on? If you can say the big banksters and their government overlords who brung you to the party, you're on the right track. And I guess you'd have to say, speaking of incompetence, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen sent markets into a tizzy on Tuesday, says another piece, courtesy of ShiftGold.com and Michael Meharry, when she said that interest rates may just have to rise to keep the economy from overheating. Yeah, sure, what with all the government stimulus and newly printed money out of nothing. But later in the day, she walked those comments back, claiming, oh, no, no, don't worry your pretty little heads about it. Inflation isn't going to be a problem.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
And insisting she wasn't actually suggesting or predicting rate hikes. But, continues Schiff Gold, Yellen's flip-flop is certainly telling, because even if inflation isn't an issue, and it sure as heck is, there isn't a darn thing the Federal Reserve can do about it at this point. Yellen made her comments during an event hosted by The Atlantic magazine, another leftist rag, warning that all of the government spending coming down the pike could cause the economy to overheat, which is code, says Meharry, for it could cause price inflation to surge. Now here, I think a brief explanation is in order, folks. An economy with a supply chain breakdown isn't going to overheat. They can't even deliver product or get so many people back to work again once they've gotten used to the dole. The problem sure as heck isn't overheating. It's what's called velocity of money. But hey, there's another one of those complex math things that dumbed-down leftists and public policy experts just aren't going to understand. It has to do with how fast money moves through the economy. And think of it this way. Most Americans who are seeing stimmy checks come in realize that, hey, price inflation looks like it's out of control. If I've got this hot money burning a hole in my pocket, I'd better get rid of it while it still might buy something. And fast. Meaning that if everybody spends it as fast as they can get it, and they chase fewer goods and services with lots and lots more cash, guess what happens? Oh, yeah. It's exactly what we're seeing. And von Mises, we talked about him earlier, called it the crack-up boom. The point, inevitable in a hyperinflation, when the average Joe realizes that the money in his wallet is never, ever going to be worth as much again as it is at this very instant. So you better spend it while you can. Back to Yellen speak. Quote, it may be that interest rates will have to rise somewhat to make sure that our economy doesn't overheat, even though the additional spending is relatively small relative to the size of the economy.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
And not surprising, since what now passes for markets are well into bubble territory anyway, Yellen's comments spooked them. Because they're already worried that the Fed might tighten monetary policy sooner rather than later to deal with obvious and increasing price inflation. Tech stocks in particular were hammered after Yellen's comments. So she walked them back later in the day, parroting Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell's mantra that any price increases, if they happen at all, will be transitory. And let me tell you what that means briefly, folks, because there is an element of truth to it. Look at what's happened to lumber prices. They're up hundreds of percent because people are saying, hey, if you want to build, you better get it. There isn't much to be had. So guess what? The price rises. But wait a minute. If pretty soon people find that they can't afford houses anyway and the entire economy collapses, well, guess what happens to lumber prices? Yeah, same thing with steel. If nobody's able to afford it or buy the things that are made from it, what steel there is eventually comes down in price. Although at that point, the whole situation becomes kind of sort of moot. So yeah, some of the price increases will be transitory. But how about things people need, whether they like it or not, like food, energy, clothing? Well, maybe that's part of the reason why they remove some of those things from the CPI. So they think they can get away with it and lie about it a little while longer. I don't think she said there's going to be an inflationary problem, but if there is, the Fed will be counted on to address them. And what does that mean? About the only tool they still have is keeping a lid on precious metal prices via paper sales without limit. Wrote Peter Schiff, the fact that Yellen had to walk those comments back is an obvious admission that interest rates may eventually have to rise in response to stimulus spending, by later claiming that inflation won't be an issue, and that highlights the Fed's lack of ability to fight inflation. Well, says the author, there's been an inflation problem now for quite a while, from the moment the Fed started printing trillions of dollars out of thin air to monetize trillions in government spending. And now we're starting to see the impact of that inflation on prices. Because anybody who's been to the grocery store, the gas station, or Home Depot has experienced big price increases firsthand. The question is, just how transitory are they really? Due to things like supply chain bottlenecks, as the economy at least tries to reopen and return to normal oil demand returns, as Yellen insists. Despite her assurances, he says the Fed can't be counted on to address them given the state of the economy. And the very fact that the markets throw a hissy fit at even the slightest hint of rate increases bears this out. And can you imagine the carnage on Wall Street if the Fed actually did raise rates? Says the author, the U.S. government simply can't afford rising rates, and it certainly can't have the Fed tapering its bond purchases. In fact, I'd argue that Uncle Sam's going to need the Fed to step up its quantitative easing, buying Big Brother's bonds with money created out of nothing, because nobody else will. And who are we kidding? There's no way to tax the turnip in order to pay for what the Biden Fuhrer and his communist overlords already have planned. The Fed's backed into a corner. Powell knows it, Yellen knows it, and you should too, even if they're going to lie to you about it until it's too late. Get ready, folks. It's here.